Okay, yeah, so this is a study, it's a pilot study to really think about how interventions could be designed for this specific population. And from Children's Hospital Los Angeles, the Community Health Outcomes and Intervention Research Program there. And I have nothing to disclose. Okay, so kind of briefly to give you a little background on the issue of IPV within the special population. There's very little research that looks at partner violence within sexual minorities, but especially gay men's populations, and in particular, young gay men's populations. What we have found is that the estimates of prevalence in these populations is very similar to heterosexual women. It depends on the population, how it's being screened, of course, with the definition of IPV. But in general, we see very similar rates of IPV within sexual minority groups and within gay men's populations. In spite of this, there's not a single evidence-based intervention that exists to address IPV within sexual minority populations. And so this particular study was really conducted to better understand some of the issues that might be specific within these populations to think about what an intervention might look like. It's also important to look at this particular time period of emerging adulthood. It's that time period between 18 and 25 years old, thereabouts. So it's after adolescence and before you're really a young adult. And the idea behind this time period is that this is the time that young people are oftentimes moving out of the home for the first time. They may be going to college, they may be getting a job. And for gay young men in particular, this may be the first time that they're really able to form intimate relationships. They may be outside the control of their parents, moving on their own. So this is a very potentially vulnerable time for this population. And within this population, we see escalated rates of drug use, other substance use, such as alcohol, and high-risk sex. So looking at partner violence, which can potentially be a covariate of this, is really important in this time period. Okay. So the methods for this study, it was a mixed method study. And we weren't really sure when we were starting designing the study about how are we going to really recruit the right population if we want to make sure that we're able to get some in-depth information about partner violence. We can't go out on the street and screen for this. And young men who have sex with men are kind of a hidden population to begin with about how you recruit for the study. So what we decided to do is we recruited from gay-identified venues, such as bars and clubs, social service agencies, and then also universities in the Los Angeles area. Young men to qualify had to be between the ages of 18 to 25. We wanted to do focus groups that were stratified by race, ethnicity, so we recruited groups of Asian Pacific Islander young men, Latino, Hispanic, African American, white Caucasian. They had to identify as gay, bisexual, or have had sex with a man. They had to have been in what they identified as a primary partner relationship in the last 12 months. And we let them come up with what primary partner relationship meant to them. We gave them an example of how we would define that, but let the young man himself decide what that meant for him. And then they also had to live in LA County. So if young men met that criteria and were interested, they were recruited for a focus group, where the focus groups were designed to really talk about general relationship challenges that they had experienced. After that focus group, they completed a survey. And from that survey, we were able to identify young men who had been involved in partner violence. And we used the CTS, the revised CTS as well, to do that. So we were able to identify individuals who were involved in what we defined as minor forms of IPV, and this was a negotiation with our IRB because they didn't necessarily, the original idea was bringing in dyads, so we would have the young man and his partner come in and talk about the partner violence. For other reasons beyond the scope of this presentation, that was a real challenge, but we had worked out with our IRB at that point that we would only bring in young men who were involved in minor forms as scored by the CTS, to avoid potential issues with their partner if they both came in. And I can talk about that offline if people are interested. So for those young men, we did qualitative interviews with them to really better understand how violence is perpetrated and the issues that were going on in their relationships. So what I'm presenting today is a mix of all three of these methods. So it's really mixed methods. I realized last night I had forgotten to put in a table of demographics for the young men, so in case you're interested. The average age is about 21 and a half. As I mentioned, we were stratifying across the four primary racial ethnic groups across LA, so we had a pretty even split between those four. About half, or 47%, still lived at home with their family. Most of them were either in school or employed. 72% identified as gay and 27% as bisexual. And from a financial stability standpoint, this is something really hard to measure with this population, but we saw that about half of them had had some financial stability by asking, how often did you run out of money for basic needs in the past 3 months? So some of them had at least once or twice had experienced that, about half of them. Okay, so based on the CTS scores, here's some results in the prevalence of IPV with this particular group. So we looked at the four primary types of violence or injury that the CTS scores, looking at victimization and perpetration. So you'll see over 80% reported being both a victim and perpetrator psychological aggression. Over 60% experienced at least some type of physical assault, and this is the past year. Over 60% had experienced being a victim, at least, of sexual coercion, and so 58% is a perpetrator, and then injury is quite a bit lower, but still about 25% had been a victim of an injury. The most common types of physical assault that we saw were grabbing their partner, pushing or shoving their partner, slapping their partner, or kicking or punching their partner, so it kind of ran the gamut. And then the most common types of sexual coercion were insisting on sex and insisting on sex without a condom. And when we're talking about this population in particular, you're opening up looking at HIV transmission as well. So taking this into account, you see relatively high rates of IPV here. So we really wanted to better understand some of the factors that were important to really identify within the relationship. One thing we really wanted to focus on is power. We don't know a lot about how power is really defined, conceptualized in young men's relationships. And what we found in the qualitative research is that these discussions really identified some very unique aspects of young men's relationships that really should be addressed at interventions. Both at the individual and dyadic level, as well as societal influences that may also contribute to young men's feeling disempowered and contributing to their loss of power and control in their relationships. So I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the individual dyadic issues and then move on to some societal as well. So by far one of the most common things that we'd heard when we asked young men, how's power conceptualized, how do you decide who has the power in your relationship? Most common was sexual positioning, meaning who takes on the receptive or insertive position in sex. They really said that the people in the receptive role or the bottom often meant that partner was in a much less powerful position. And sometimes there were we saw some racial ethnic differences here as well, whereas Asian young men were often perceived as stereotyped as being in this more receptive, less powerful position, as were some Latino men. African American, Caucasian men were seen as usually taking on the insertive role and being the more powerful individuals. Receptive partners were usually described as submissive, weaker, and the female in the relationship. We heard that term quite a bit. Some also felt that the bottom may have a stronger emotional attachment in the relationship, thereby making him potentially more vulnerable. And again, kind of making some comparisons to the traditional female in the relationship, perhaps becoming more emotionally involved. Here's a quote. So I think, like, hypothetically, if the bottom wanted to use a condom, the top would be like, no, fuck that. And then, then the bottom would just deal with it if they didn't walk away from it. Why do you think they just deal with it? Because they're mostly, like, attached to that person. It's hard for people to leave relationships that are actually, like, not good for them. Conversely, tops were seen as more masculine and usually more in control of the relationship. I have a quote here. He made me feel like what I was doing wasn't enough. Not only am I doing what I have to do, but I'm picking you up from school. I take you to work and pick you up from work. I think, like tradition, if I'm going to be here topping you, I'm going to take care of you. And it wasn't good enough for him. So I would slap him, shut up, But it was never really like something really bad where he had to be seen medically. It was like a slap in the face, like, you know, like, shut up, bitch, or something like that. So really, some of the language, and I see some of you kind of taking this in, some of the language we heard is just really kind of minimizing the violence in the relationship as well, kind of taking it as this, which is very normalized, which I don't think you hear quite as much in heterosexual relationships. I could be mistaken about that, but this normalization of violence between men was something that really spoke to us. Kind of looking at that again, looking at gender roles within the relationship. They often said that someone had to take on the feminine or submissive role. Females were described as being catty, soft-spoken, and males as independent and taking care of a partner. And in several instances, young men commented that developing and sustaining a gay relationship was really challenging in the absence of role models. So really what they ended up doing was relying on what they had either seen from their parents or seen on TV, looking at heterosexual images. They didn't really have role models themselves to define their own relationships. And so that's where a lot of this language is very traditional, very outdated types of gender role language, I think, was coming from, is that it just doesn't, they don't have anything to compare it to. And we were bringing this to our advisory board several months ago, and one member on our advisory board said, you know, what they're saying here sounds so much like what you would see in partner violence work in the 1970s. It's so dated, and it's like you're almost starting from scratch again with this population. So here's a quote, just because I feel like even though you're in a gay relationship, you still go by a straight relationship. Like the way if there's a guy and there's a girl, it's just, you just have to go with that flow. It's always going to, I'm not going to say be a complete female, but there has to be someone that's more masculine and in control than someone that's not. So the sense that there had to be this kind of differentiation. So in spite of what was described about what they actually saw as more typical in their own and other relationships that they saw, they actually seemed to desire these more egalitarian relationships. So here's young one man who says, I'd rather be equal 100%, 50-50. Than one person feeling like they can take it, almost like taking advantage of the other person. So this seemed to have a desire to make it more equitable, but weren't really sure how to go about that. Another thing that came up was maturity. Many of these young men had very limited dating experiences, given their age. And they had limited options. As at least they perceived, they had very limited options for romantic relationships as young gay men. And it's really not uncommon from this research and other research I've done with this population for young men to report this type of violence or sexual coercion in their first relationship because they're coming in without a lot of knowledge, and I think that's similar for anyone. They may be feeling that they couldn't do any better or they're really insecure with low self-esteem. Also very common for young men's first relationships to be with substantially older partners. And so these are like 18, 19, 20-year-old guys, maybe younger, dating men in their 30s. So it puts them at a very much a power differential. So here's a young man who was talking about his first relationship that involved emotional, sexual, physical violence, and he's kind of reflecting back on that, saying, I've changed a lot. After being with that ex-boyfriend, I got to experience a lot more different men. And as I grew older, I grew into my looks, and I got a lot more opportunities. So I feel like now, I don't feel like that's the only person that will love me and that will be attracted to me. So kind of this sense of maturity, as they grow into themselves, become more comfortable, they may not be quite as vulnerable. Okay. So some of the societal influences, I touched upon this earlier, but we asked the young men, you know, does IPV, is this even something that exists in gay relationships? Most of them felt that was not the case. They felt that was something that only existed between a man and a woman. Kind of interesting. They knew what it was. Well, they knew what domestic violence was. They didn't necessarily know the term IPV, but they saw that as being between men and women. They also oftentimes described this biological instinct for men to fight. We had some young men that said that, you know, growing up with their brothers, that's just how they dealt with their problems. They just fight it out. Or their cousins or their friends, that was just the way they dealt with problems with other men or young men, fight it out. So that idea of boys will be boys. Here's a quote. So I feel like the capacity for violence is a lot higher by default just based on the excessive testosterone in a male-male relationship. Also, if possible, I feel it's more possible for both partners to be violent and both partners to be simultaneously perpetrators and victims, because they're both, I mean, they're both men. They're both capable of being violent and both capable of fighting, and they have that desire to fight each other. So the final societal influence that we were looking at is some of the discrimination that young men felt. They felt that some of the limitations that society has put on gay relationships are really to blame for some of their own ambivalence about their own relationships. So also marriage, that's a big difference. You don't really know like how long your relationship's going to go because you don't have that opportunity to get married. So it's like, what are you doing, you know? How long is this going to last? So this idea that they couldn't have a permanent relationship, and this was done a few months before Prop 8 was overturned in California, so that has changed now. But at the time, the gay communities were feeling a slap in the face about all of that and really felt that their idea of having a permanent relationship had been taken away from them. Feeling unable to openly bond has limited their abilities to develop relationships in the same way as heterosexual couples. So feeling like they couldn't go out in public holding hands or kiss their boyfriend really gave them some limitations on how they could form their relationships. Their relationships only existed in private, not in the public sphere. And then some partners' comfort in actually being out can also lead to some power differential as well. So not being comfortable holding their boyfriend's hand or even dancing with them in public. Here's a young man that says, when I was in a relationship, my partner really wanted to show public displays of affection, and it made me kind of uncomfortable. He'd try to, like, hold my hand or something in public, and I'd feel really uncomfortable about it. And it usually creates, like, an awkward atmosphere between the both of us. And then it usually ends up in a fight because he feels very unwanted, rejection, and stuff like that. So this can also create a lot of tension in their relationships. And finally, as I already mentioned, there's kind of a reticence to acknowledge IPV even existing when young men talked about it. But some young men actually said that it was just one more thing that society can put on top of them. They already feel like they're kind of put down. They're seen as lesser than. And if this is one more issue that they have to kind of deal with in their communities, it just kind of brings them down even further. So here it says, with a gay relationship, I feel like there's a lot of insecurity that happens. So when it comes to abusive relationships, some guys, I feel like they would back down and just take it because they don't want to add another flaw on top of them. So feeling that they don't necessarily have the resources to go to. We did ask about help seeking for those who had been involved in violence, and very few had actually gone to the police or any other type of social service agency. Most of them felt that they just wouldn't be heard or understood. However, for the few that actually had gone to the police, it actually was a pretty positive experience. So that's a positive thing that it is. They did have a good experience, but the perception is it will not be. So kind of need to work on that perception. And so then finally, we pulled together a model to kind of think about what this really, kind of pull this all together. So in looking at these societal influences and how those really can contribute to young men's sense of power, and these are the different issues that are conceptualizing power. And what we see is that having either high or low power makes you both vulnerable for perpetration and victimization. So it's kind of a continuum here. And there are very high rates of mutual perpetration, which you could kind of see from that graph. And when we really looked at to see the overlap between the two, you see very similar rates between the two groups. Okay. So kind of sum it all up, we see really high rates of IPV, different types of IPV with this population. Developing an approach to addressing IPV in these populations may actually be an innovative approach for HIV prevention. I didn't go into the rates of HIV with this population, but this is one of the few populations where you actually see HIV rates increasing in the U.S. So if you can actually intervene at the couples level, you may actually have some success in addressing HIV because you see that most transmissions are occurring in these primary partner relationships. We found high rates of mutual perpetration, and we also see that these power dynamics do exist in same-sex relationships. This is something that's been ignored before. Haven't really looked at it. So they're not created in a vacuum. Societal influences also are really important to these power differentials. And if you think about the interventions that exist for women that are victims of IPV, they're usually developed around this power and gender framework. And so I think looking at how gender roles are kind of thought of in these relationships and thinking about how power is conceptualized in young men's relationships is also important to lay that foundation for interventions, which is the next step for this particular study. That's it. My acknowledgement. Yeah.
Okay, so first, questions for our speaker and then maybe throw it open.
Mm-hmm.
How much of that do you think might be a nuance of this particular minor form of intimate partner violence, whereas mm-hmm. if it were more severe, you might see a more distinct relationship of power? And I don't know if you got to any of that. Through the course of your interviews, maybe
well, what we learned from the interviews is from the CTS, because that's looking at past year, when we actually brought them in, we saw that many of them had experienced much more severe forms of violence in prior relationships. So what we saw was, I think that that's a good point that we should look at a little bit more, but I feel like in those interviews we did have a pretty good breadth of different types of experiences for young men that had been in different types of positions related to power. But that is a point that I hadn't thought of, so I'll look at that. Yeah. Yes.
Now, I know you can collect data from lesbians, but can you speculate about whether any of the variables that you model might?
I think some of these variables might. I mean, there is a slightly larger literature around lesbian IPD than young and gay men. And I think some of these things, particularly related to gender roles, I think the prior relationship experiences, the maturity, and I think the societal influence are still going to be very valid. Some of the others I'm not as sure about, but I would think that this would be a good kind of grounding to maybe start with to investigate that. Yeah.
This study came from the Children's Hospital of Los Angeles.
Yes. Well, I work for Children. We didn't recruit at Children's Hospital, just to kind of put that out there. But we did not ask that. We asked about their experiences growing up and maybe abuse that they might have experienced. But this violence that was occurring and was not necessarily occurring in their home, it was either in the community. I guess I'm not really sure. Are you asking if there were minor children at home when this was going on? We didn't ask that. But a lot of the violence that's occurring between the young men isn't necessarily happening at home either. So it's happening more in the community.
Did you look at substance abuse, alcohol, and all that stuff?
We did. Quantitatively, I haven't looked very closely at that data yet. We just finished cleaning it about 3 weeks ago, so I wasn't super confident in presenting stuff on it here. Qualitatively, I can tell you that alcohol, drug use is surprisingly not as high in this group as I had anticipated when looking at other samples with this population. Alcohol for young men seems to be, to some extent, a driving factor, and I think they recognize that they shouldn't. A lot of these fights happen when one or the other partner is drunk, and they escalate much faster when one or the other partners is drunk. Not surprising. A lot of them seem to have the knowledge that they shouldn't try to push an argument when someone's drunk, but they do see that as being a real catalyst for fights. Quantitatively, I haven't examined that relationship yet, but drug use did not come up at all really as a potential issue. Actually, I'll take that back for just a minute. There was a small group that said that they would use marijuana as a way to calm themselves down. So they saw that as a tactic to actually kind of de-escalate the situation.